Blog Talk Radio.
Well, I've had one too many cigarettes burning up my lungs. Had to taste of one too many lips hanging off my tongue. Oh, oh, oh. Sunday morning getting high, drinking here alone. Thinking up a brand new alibi for not coming home. Oh, oh.
People who, like the founder of the show, recognize they're on a dangerous path and make the difficult adjustment to be an amazing person. Share poems that reveal the duality of our vulnerability and strength. Capture the internal battle of the demon and angel on your shoulder. Deep poetry, thoughtful commentary, and fun chatter for sinners, saints, and everyone in between. This is part sinner, part saint on Late Night Poets After Midnight. I'm Faziana, and Babbler is away, but we have someone wonderful here to join us, Pam Ray. Hi, Pam.
Hey, Fazy. How's it going?
You know, it's a little crazy around here, what with the forest fires and whatnot, but I'm still here, so, you know.
Well, that's good. That's good.
Yeah.
And but I imagine the air gets kind of difficult.
Yes. Today's not as bad, but we've been at 11 on the scale of like 1 to 10, where 1 is like healthy, and at a 5, you should maybe not go outside, and at a 10, you like basically need a mask and a respirator, and like it's like danger, do not go outside. So we're in 11.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm fortunate, though.
1 through 10 system, they'd stop at 10, and that would be enough.
Yeah.
But I guess they have to put that extra number to so you really understand how bad it is.
They're like, just so you know, you're going to die. Not quite to that extreme, but, you know, at 10, it's supposed to be like, if you have breathing problems, it's dangerous to be outside. At an 11, it's dangerous for anyone to be outside.
Okay. That makes sense. Yep.
But I can't complain because, you know, my house is safe, so that's more than I can say for other people. So I am actually quite fortunate.
Absolutely. It is something to be thankful for. And, you know, sending out, you know, positive energy, prayers, and good thoughts to everybody, you know, that hopefully everyone is as safe as possible. You know, I'm very fortunate to live in an area where we don't really get much of the, you know, we don't get any of the smoke and stuff from Canada that other areas of the United States have. So.
Mm-hmm. Yep. But it's okay because we have poetry. And poetry
That's
can
right.
get us into our happy places.
exactly. And a great lineup tonight.
We do. So the poems tonight are at least primarily going to be from my contest that was based on the prompt, a seed neither fears light nor darkness, but uses both to grow, which is by Matshanana Dileo. I do have a secondary contest if we have more time at the end, but I have a feeling that's going to be pushed till next show. So we're going to start with this prompt, and I did open it to pre-writes, which I rarely do, so we'll see what a mix we have, because pre-writes always take us in a little bit different directions sometimes, so we will see how that goes.
Sounds good.
This first poem is called From Humble Dark Beginnings, and it's by LOLL. I grew beneath the shadows where light was hard to find, lay there amongst the darkness and abandoned, left behind. I reached with pure devotion and climbed through air to see. The only way was upwards. And that was down to me. The sun and rain were nearing, yet still so out of reach, till rainbows rose beneath me to cause the earth to breach. And here I stand before you, a vision and a gift, oasis in a desert, a shelter when adrift. My fruit will ease your hunger and calm your raging thirst. My leaves will gently whisper their melody rehearsed. My arms will hold you firmly so you won't feel alone. My spirit now within you will guide you safely home. I am an ancient wonder. So few have seen me thrive. But all who come asunder, I vow to keep alive. And each has told their story, tales of a phantom tree. From humble dark beginnings, the tree of life is me. End poem.
Wonderful reader, Susie. You know, this is just absolutely stunning. Great rhyme and flow. I really like how it is right about the tree of life and about a spiritual tree. But you can also take it literally about the gifts that trees offer up to us. But I get more of the impression, especially with those end lines, of this idea of the spirituality within nature and the life force in and around the universe. And I really like this all the way through, but especially that end stanza, and especially where it says, my fruit will ease your hunger and calm your raging thirst. My leaves will gently whisper their melody rehearsed. And I like those lines because those are the lines that make me think about the idea of being literally about a tree and the idea that what nature has to offer up, and not just, you know, easing the physical, you know, taking care of the physical needs like hunger and thirst, but you know, our emotional needs, hearing those leaves rustling, that music that they make as with the movement of the wind. I think this is an excellent rite and very well done.
I agree. I like that you pointed out that it's not just the physical needs that the tree provides, that there is that beauty of hearing it and seeing it and feeling shelter, not just to have shelter, but to have that emotional comfort of it, and you won't feel alone. So not only does it like protect you from the wind and the sun and all the things, but you have that sense of being with another living being, and I think that's wonderful. This really plays back to so many ancient cultures. I mean, the tree of life is in many, I would guess, pagan histories from all over the place. In Norse mythology, there's Yggdrasil, I can never pronounce it, but many, many different cultures talk about the tree being what everything comes from, and it makes sense that that would be kind of a universal thing, because the trees do help us in so many ways. So to think of that as kind of like the source of all these things, of the hope and the providing, just is really beautifully captured in this. It had a nice cadence to it, like reading it out loud felt really good. I didn't count the syllables or anything, but it had a steady meter to it where it just, there was no choppiness. It flowed really nicely. And I like the way that it's worded, like to cause the earth to breach. So it's not just like the plant came out of the ground, but cause the earth to breach just has this beautiful drama to it. Where is it now? The tales of a phantom tree. So even once a tree is gone, there's still kind of that essence of it, the effect that this has had. And when you think about it, I mean, like, a tree probably left a heritage of other trees from dropping acorns and things, from the animals that it kept alive. There's things from that tree that will go on and on. And so this just has a beautiful feeling of both the physical of an actual tree and kind of the more metaphorical sense of how we are influenced by our environment. Really well done, and I like the picture that was included too, where it's kind of like a woman who's hunched over and the trees coming out of her. It's a really interesting picture. I like it. Looks like she won gold in another contest, which was Grow Where You're Planted, and I can see why it would win gold. It's very nice.
Absolutely, and it fit well. It really fit well with your prompt, too, I thought. So, very cool.
I agree. And sometimes it's not so so easy to find ones that fit in pre-writes, but this one did really work nicely. Our next one is by Jaskaran, and there is an audio included in that, so I'm going to play that.
God made Aaron equal, so don't dare outside partisan. Sometimes there's no hidden eye in the heart of partisan, fighting in battles. You never know, there will be imprints on minds, and life is some beauty change. This is called seeing the world through the eyes of an artistic child. A seed embarking on an evocative, ethereal journey through the ocean of winter. See in autumn, under the warm blanket of earth's leaves, and the wind singing the vine. Bees on the mountain, tang scents, as flow within the fist. You see the tender hands, a curled wisp of cloud, titillating on the roof, floating for a gentle breeze, moving between her heartbeats. It was like a sea, moving through better and water, removing the moon doesn't get wet, but coordinating with the stream. It feels spurting out. It feels a dim light, with autumn moonlight, lost from our childhood, embracing poet to poet, and make it in the green fields. Palms in the world, we put it into a poem. As we catch from leaf, you may not understand what I tell, but I can mountain like an oak, between light from a river, with the touch and constant heart. My self-soaked hands, tickling, you will drop into you. My eyes are a world that I have not another hope. Sometimes it is a river, no one can imagine anything, or who do the things no one can imagine. Thank you.
This starts off with some alliteration, embarking, evocative, ethereal, and those aren't just words that all start with E, but they're wonderful word choices. Those are all strong words that, you know, create an atmosphere to get us started. Then it goes into the floating on a gentle breeze, blown between his heartbeats. I really like that, blown between the heartbeats. That's such a beautiful detail as well. And then it goes into a section where it changes physically what it looks like. So it moves to the right a little bit, and each line gets a little bit longer. And then there's a space, and then it changes. So really, it's one that you want to take a look at in writing, not just listen to, because it's very strategic in the way that the spacing is done. And I like the line, "You may not understand what I utter, but I can move mountains." Because even if people cannot be understood by everyone, they still have something valuable to say. It makes me think about, there's this group at the library where I work called Kaya, and they are an alternative communication group. So people who are nonverbal, for various reasons, join this group, and they learn how to share their thoughts in different ways. So some of them have pictures that they show. Some of them have little sound machines, so they type things in and it says it. They're all different kinds of ways of expressing themselves. And these are people who, before we had this kind of technology or this group, might have been thought to not have these inner thoughts that are very vibrant. So I really like that he uses that and then compares them like an oak lifting the light from a river. An oak lifting the light from a river. That is such an amazing visual that comes to my mind when I read that. There was another part that talked about the moon, where the moon reflects on the water without getting wet. And so that part I took to mean, like, we can, without being totally involved, we can see the value of something without necessarily experiencing it fully. This has a lot to it, and I think it was really skillfully written. What did you think, Pam?
Well, I have to agree. It is definitely skillfully written. And I like how the main message to me is embracing the mind that sees things in a different way. And as you were saying, the mind that thinks differently, that can't communicate the same way, you know, still has values. Their thoughts, their emotions, what they have to offer still has values. I felt like in part because of the title and because of the mention of the autistic child, that the lines that are spaced and staggered differently are perhaps a representation of how somebody with autism will see things differently. And I like how he wrote on the topic of autism, and it still fit in so well with your topic, especially with the opening lines, a seed embarking on an evocative ethereal journey through the essence of winter, sleeping with autumn. And I really like autistic child's firm belief. You may not understand what I utter, but I can move mountains like an oak, lifting the light from a river with my tender touch and compassionate heart. Those are lines that really do touch my heart. Wonderful imagery and metaphors, and very well done.
I agree. Okay. Our next poem is called Prescribed Burn. And would you please read that for us, Pam?
Absolutely. I'd be happy to. Prescribed Burn by Almost Actually. I learned how to set a prescribed burn from a former park ranger. I tied my hair back and tested the wind. I kicked my boots through the underbrush. I checked for moisture. I told the rabbits to run. I only lit the fire because I love the forest, only because I can see leaves on bare trees, flowers blooming from scorched earth, only because a wildfire wouldn't be so delicate, so loving as me. I'm no good at being young. I have never set my own life on fire just to see what grows back. Somewhere in me there are seeds waiting to sprout, waiting until the mess and litter is cleared away to shoot up green and proud, my own ecosystem in balance again. End poem.
Great read, Pam. And this is a wonderful poem. I mean, it's a little bit close to home with the whole fire thing, but it's true. If the prescribed burns are done carefully, they can prevent the really big fires. And I think this is a beautiful metaphor for having to restart sometimes to do the painful thing of getting rid of parts of your life that are not right. So yes, it hurts to burn down that little bit of the forest to save the rest of it, but maybe with your own life that means burning some bridges with old friends who are maybe bad influences, maybe leaving a relationship that's not working and allowing yourself to move on and find something that will make you happier. I think that last stanza really clarifies what it's all representing. So it works on a practical sense, and then it just takes on the life of the metaphor, recognizing that, you know, it's not something that comes naturally, that it's easier to say than to do. You never set your own life on fire like you should, but maybe someday there'll be that opportunity to clear away and start again. This is wonderful. I think I'm new to Almost Actually's writing, and I really enjoy it. What did you think, Pam?
I enjoy this too, and they're new to me also, and I do hope that we'll be reading and hearing more from them for our shows. I like how they use the extended metaphor of the prescribed burn. And then, you know, the first two stanzas talks about the actual fire. And then the third stanza wraps up in a way of seeing that prescribed burn as a metaphor for our own lives. Like you were saying, it really speaks well on realizing when it's time to start over again, realizing when it's time to let go of certain things or certain people in your life and move on and move forward. And yes, it's going to hurt, and yes, it's going to destroy a certain part of yourself. But in the end, you'll grow to be a better person. You'll find that ecosystem balance, you know. And so just a really wonderful write all the way through. And I really like the line especially, "I only lit the fire because I love the forest." It's that whole idea of, you know, loving yourself so much that you destroy that temporary happiness to find something more fulfilling. So wonderful write and very well done.
Well said, Pam. Our next poem is by I. Kale, "Foul Towel, Every Last Person." In the eyes of men, I find my place. Their thoughts, like magic, a binding embrace. A regular guy, part of the grand show, walking, talking, hence I come and go. Shared judgments, no halos here, no saints to save, no divine veneer. They cling to the world, hold it tight, ignoring the creator. They lost sight of what's right, thinking they're superior, so high and mighty, critiquing, scorning, confidence feisty, yet their own mistakes carefully veiled, hidden truths like secrets mailed. In shadows, deception skillfully spun, by the devil's hand their battles are won. Still they pass judgments with no retreat, while their own imperfections remain discreet. Through speech, brevity finds its might, breaking dams that hold men tight. Words are bridges, brief and bright, an olive branch of love's pure light. Love each other. End poem.
Wonderful, Rita Faziana. This has great rhyme and flow. And I like the message of reaching out the olive branch, and how we struggle with learning to accept and understand other people, and especially people who don't agree with us. And it speaks to me on the idea of being too hard-headed, but also, you know, I guess, on the idea of people who aren't willing, you know, to change, you know, and the thought of, you know, how important change is, how important growth is. And I thought this was a wonderful rhyming poem, and very well done.
I agree. And it had quite a bit of internal rhyme as well. It's not just the ends of lines. There were lots of little bits in there where it had rhyming going. And I liked the shared judgments, no halos here, no saints to save, no divine veneer. It's like admitting that, you know, nobody's perfect. And I mean, think about our show, Part Sinner, Part Saint. It's in the opening that, you know, we're all a little mixed of good and bad. I liked "in shadows, deceptively, skillfully spun." Again, I'm an alliteration nerd, so the shadows skillfully spun. I like that. And there was another part that had really cool wording. I mean, there's more alliteration with bridges, brief and bright. There was another part that I've lost track of that I really enjoyed the way that the words were twisted in there. So I think it was skillfully written, and it did have a good message. So well done, IKL.
Absolutely.
Our next poem. G.A. Grimm made us an audio, which we always appreciate. here is G.A. Grimm.
Yin and Yang, Boomerang, by G.A. Grimm. Life is a blender. Put all your stuff in and hit parade. That's you. And yes, it may taste like shit. Honestly, we are, each of us, making it up as we go. There's no blueprint to life. No cheat code. Whether we admit it or not, life is chaos. A storm of unpredictable. There is no fairness or equality. What you take from it and where you put it is all on you. So go. Seek your answers. Find your truth. Live your best life. But remember this, it makes no promises, and you get just the one.
Thank you for the audio, G.A. Grimm. I always enjoy your audios. I like the way that he uses conversational tone. You know, it's everyday kind of language and very straightforward, which I think fits with the content of the poem. I really liked we are each of us making it up as we go. There is no blueprint to life, no cheat code. You know, there's this expectation of like, you know, there's secrets to happiness, or if only someone would explain what to prepare for. But you really can't. I mean, to a certain degree, you can have plans, but I like the way that he words it there. No blueprints, you know, we can't map it out. No cheat code if we're, you know, gamers who are used to being able to be like, remember playing The Sims, and if you get bored with your little tiny house, you do like control $$ or something like that, and then suddenly you're a millionaire and you can make all kinds of fancy things. You can't do that in real life. There's no little control money sign where it just puts you on easy mode. There's no little control heart where you can just naturally have someone love you. Everything takes work and chance and all kinds of things. So I think describing it as a blender where, you know, you add all the ingredients, but how it comes out, you don't have full control of. I liked the way that he described that. And he had like a lightness to it. It's serious in that it's talking about, like, you know, life is going to punch you when things are not necessarily going to work out the way you want. But he does it in kind of a playful manner, and it's thoughtful, but it also has kind of a gentleness to it. I think this was really well done. What were your thoughts, Pam?
I like that observation on the poem that it's, you know, thoughtful and gentle. And I have to agree. And I do like his straightforward style and his reading voice. Great, great title here, Yin and Yang, Boomerang. I all the way through, like, the opening lines, life is a blender, put all your stuff in and hit puree, that's you, and yes, it may taste like shit. Makes me think of some of the smoothie experiments I've tried that have just failed miserably and end up with that ugly, like, grayish color. But I thought the imagery and metaphor was great in this. I really like how it speaks on the idea that the parts of our experiences, the good experiences and the bad experiences, get blended together to make us complete. I really like a storm of unpredictability. There is no fairness or equality. What you take from it and where you put it is all on you. So, you know, you're going to have a life filled with these learning moments that are both good and bad. And, you know, just, I don't know, just an amazing, thoughtful write and very well done. And oh my goodness, I just all of a sudden I have the theme song from the Facts of Life flashing through my head. I don't know if you've seen that show. I know you're quite a few years younger than me, but if you've seen reruns of it, or even if they have it in Canada. But the theme song basically goes, you take the good, you take the bad, you both take them both, and there you have the facts of life. Probably.
I vaguely remember that. Like, I didn't watch it myself, but it may have been, like, on, like, maybe, like, my grandma's house or something.
Yep,
so probably. it's familiar. I mean, that song works for it.
It does. Yes. It really does fit with George's message, that's for sure. So I'm glad he was inspired.
Me too. I'm going to get you to please read the next one by Teresa.
All right. The Old Me Had to Die by Teresa Strejnikov. The old me had to die to become the woman I am today. She had to go. She could not stay, that mean and spiteful woman. For me, there was no other way. I needed to change some parts of me to become the strong lady I was meant to be. One day I will let everyone see I had to change. I had to change some parts of me. I couldn't and wouldn't stay the other her. It was not healthy for anyone. Now my transformation has begun. End poem.
Great read. And I like this recognition that, you know, sometimes you need to start over. And I think this kind of works with the plant metaphor of the prompt too, because sometimes things have to kind of evolve. You gotta take off the leaves that are dying to let the fresh buds come in. I'm so not a gardener, but I know you have to get rid of some pieces to make things grow sometimes. And I kind of think of that as like you had to let parts of yourself die to be able to grow the parts of yourself that you value. So it's a very similar message to one of the poems earlier, where it was like you have to, the fire one, where you had to burn part of yourself to be able to let the new stuff be safe and nourished. And here we see that again. It takes a lot of strength to recognize that you need to change and to put that into it, to keep going and make the effort to actually make those changes. It's impressive. So, well done. And what did you think, Pam?
Oh, I thought this was beautiful. And yes, it did very much have the same kind of message as that fire poem. And the idea that, of having to destroy certain parts of yourself in order to grow as a person, in order to go through that transformation. And, yeah, I'm not a gardener either, but I do remember in the house I used to live at years ago, we had raspberry bushes, and they weren't growing very well. And someone said, well, you need to prune them. So I pruned them. And sure enough, you know, they started growing much better. And it's the same way with trees and other plants, some bushes. You know, you really just have to prune and get rid of, as you were saying, that dead stuff, that extra weight, that extra burden, in order to become a better person. And I like how this, you know, she takes a look at herself and the person she used to be, and the person that she has transformed into. So wonderful, right, and very well done.
It reminds me a lot of something that Rima wrote, an old friend Rima who used to do this show with us. He had something that was like, it's called Double Murder or something like that. And he killed himself and he killed himself again, but he's not really killing himself. It was like he killed his old identity, or, you know, the old version of himself, and started over. But it was the way that it's written in the beginning, you kind of wonder, like, oh, what actually happened here? But no, it was him starting over. It was not actually a death, but he did it very skillfully, so I wasn't really sure where it was going.
Oh, cool. That sounds like a great poem. And I always have enjoyed and appreciated as a metaphor, you know, the idea of a death that represents you becoming a new person. So very cool.
Daniel Deschino is our next poet. And tomorrow night you can hear, or I guess today, depending on your time zone. For me, it's tomorrow. Daniel and Pam will be doing Double Helix, which I'm usually host for, but I'm going to be away, so Pam is filling in for me. Thank you for that, Pam.
My pleasure.
It's going to be a good one because we have the musician coming and doing, she's going to be commenting on the poems inspired by her music, which we started last show, and we had so many wonderful entries. It's a two-part experience of the music. So here is Daniel's poem. Gray is just black and white in harmony, part 27 of the journey. I continue to travel every day, walking, ever walking, even when still, I am not where I was a moment before. Black is peace, and each night the darkness comes. I never fear what I cannot see, for most of what is will never grace my eyes. My fear for darkness is actually that it will abandon me, leave me exposed and burning in a relentless bath of light. White is chaos. Light. What if there was only darkness, forever blindness, forever sleep? Not death, but smothering absence of life. A lightning flash of mirrors, as time is purity glass, and I frolic in the reflections, day and night. A blink of the elderly, when the heartbeat stops, when the sun is frozen, when the wolf ceases to hunt, or his mind-twisted brother can't stop killing, when the drum stops beating, so stops the dancing. In the light I discover, in the darkness I think, what would I do without the rhythm? End poem.
Great read there, Faisy. I really do enjoy seeing Daniel develop his rights for the journey rights that he does. And to think that he's already up to part 27 is really awesome. And I like how this sees that balance between good and evil. So even in the title, gray is just black and white in harmony. It's the light and the dark, good and evil, the sinner and saint, you know, finding balance. I like the lines, white is chaos. Black is peace, white is chaos. I found that interesting because, and I can see that because of the whole idea, you know, that, you know, the sense of calm, you know, looking at darker colors and how white, like, especially if you're looking at, like, you know, like snow and the sun is shining off it and it's glaring in your eyes. I also like the imagery of a lightning flash of mirrors as time and purity glass, and I frolic in the reflections, day and night, a blink of the elderly, you know, how time just seems to pass in the blink of an eye. When the heartbeat stops, when the sun is frozen, when the wolf ceases to hunt, or his mind-twisted brother can't stop killing. You know, there are so many changes we go through in life, or the mind changes, the body changes, and we no longer see ourselves as the person we once were. And I like how this is about trying to and find that sense of balance. So wonderful, right, and very well done.
I really enjoyed it as well. I like that he uses the drums as part of it, because when the drum stops beating, so stops the dancing. So the drum has, like, there's a noise, and then there's silence, and then a noise, and then there's silence. If it was constant noise, like just the bang, it wouldn't have a rhythm. If it was no bang, it wouldn't have a rhythm. So I think of it as, like, the light is when it's the bang, and the dark is when it's the pause between the bangs. And you have to have both to make it music. And you have to have light to have dark, and you have to have dark to have light. They kind of define each other. And you need to have that balance, like you said. I know often black is associated with kind of like metaphorically like evil or spookiness, like you think of like Halloween, and light tends to be like the good fairy, the generally like in old movies, the white hat is the cowboy who's good and the black hat is the one who is the troublemaker. It's just for some reason, that's how it goes. Mind you, that may be a cultural thing, and unfortunately, probably kind of racist in history. But I like that Dan takes it the other way, and I can see black as peace. I like the dark. It has, like, a quietness to it, even though dark and quiet are not necessarily the same because they're different senses. I tend to associate dark with quiet because of night, because when you're closed off in a dark space, usually it is a peaceful one. And with light, it can be sensory overload. I like that it describes as exposed. You know, people can see you in the light, and it doesn't matter if you're not doing anything bad. It's just like you can be more self-conscious with the lights on. Now I have Smells Like Teen Spirit song of head. With the lights off, it's less dangerous.
I like it.
I really like that he made black peace and white chaos, because that kind of goes against some conventions, and I think that he did a good explanation of why, but you need both. And I really like my fear for darkness is that it will actually abandon me to never have dark. That's incredible the way he did that. And, I mean, that's a form of torture that people do. When you are being questioned or whatever, sometimes they don't ever let you have dark. It's bright lights on all the time. Can be the opposite, but it makes sleep difficult. And so that's part of the torture. So you need that dark to be afraid of never having the dark. Wow. Really thought-provoking, Dan. Thank you. Okay. Our next one is by S. Sharp. And here it goes. I believe that's your turn, Pam.
All right. I dig sprouting... Sprouting from Within Myself by S. Sharp. I dig arthritic hands, rich soils, pushing under nails, needing cut. Yesterday's rain moistens million-year-old soil. bubbling in my veins, seed, discontent, descendant of life and limb, stem and leaf, the fruit of time on earth, placed carefully in God's pocket, padded lightly, morning sun brings welcome warmth, hand of life, springtime ritual, child of untold centuries, twisting in the dark of night alone, warm in nature's bed, awakens, pushing upward like shades, curtains parting, seeking the light, rejoining the stars, dancing in the solar wind. End poem.
Great read and great poem. I like that it describes the hands as arthritic, because usually arthritis is later in life, not always, but so I'm picturing kind of elderly hands, maybe not elderly, but on the older side, and this is someone with a history of gardening who's done it a lot, and then this soil has a history. It's million-year-old soil. It's been used over and over and over again. Soil that has been, you know, nourishing and then enriched by plants and possibly critters for generations and generations. And then to feel that, to have that under your nails is like to have the world under your nails. You have so much history there. And then bubbling in my veins, seed, descendant of life and limb. So I think that works in two ways. On the one hand, the soil is shows the descendants is a descendant of all of these things, but also the person in bubbling in their veins, their blood is their history, their family's genetic codes. So just like there's million year old soil, there's million year old DNA that, of course, has changed over time as it, various people in the family reproduce, but there's still that kind of historic connection within the microscopic level of the soil and the people. The fruit of time on earth, placed carefully in God's pocket. I like that. That's just saying the God's pocket, and for also saying the fruit of time on earth. So the progress that you've made on earth, the heritage that you are leaving on earth, the time on earth has led to these multiple generations. Where's the other part that I want to talk about? Pushing upwards like shades, curtains parting, seeking the light. So to have those kind of sprouts of the plants that are just starting, they push their way through to get closer to the sun, to be nourished, and just like us, you know, putting ourselves out there and rejoining the stars, making that connection to the sky and the world as, the seeds that they come out of came from a tree that was, or a plant that was out there in the world. And there's like that kind of instinct. I don't know if instinct is right for a plant, but they have something like instinct. It's probably not the right word, but they have some kind of thing where they do it. Because there are actually some plants, they will turn the direction of the sun at different times of day because they know that that's, sort of do know. The plant does what it has to do to survive, and that is kind of true of people as well. So I thought this was a really interesting poem. How'd it work for you, Pam?
Oh, it worked very well for me. But, you know, you now have me questioning, you know, because there's got to be a word for the instinct, but applied to plants, reaction I just can't think of it, but you really have me thinking now, because usually, you know, instinct applies to animals or people. So, interesting. But about Scott's poem, as always, he's just got amazing imagery and metaphors. And I like how you brought up, and I saw the same thing myself, in the idea of the history within this person and the history within the soil. And the amazing imagery and metaphors, really an excellent write on pushing forward to find the light, and that connects oneself to the universe. And I like how this speaks on a spiritual awakening, a connection with the universe, especially in those end lines, pushing upward like shade, curtains parting, seeking the light, rejoining the stars, dancing in the solar winds. I thought dancing in the solar winds was really one of the most beautiful ending lines I've seen in a while. And I like how this speaks on the gardening of the world and of nature, but it also speaks on the gardening of the soul. So excellent write and very well done.
And when I hear solar wind, I kind of think of the Northern Lights, because it's like the lights kind of dance like they're in the wind. And I just saw that for the first time this year. Actually, no, I had when I was very young, but I don't actually remember it. I just hear stories. And even though it wasn't super bright where I was, it is quite the phenomenon to see it move, those lights move. So dancing in the solar wind, I'm imagining the kind of dance of the light reflecting. Okay.
That would be beautiful to see. I've never actually seen the Northern Lights. It sounds amazing.
It is. I was asleep in my tent, and someone was going around the campground going, get up, look at the sky.
That would be one time I'd probably be happy that somebody woke me up.
Right?
I'm usually one of those people that if you wake me up, you wake me up standing far enough that you're not within my striking distance.
Yeah. Oh, it was worth getting up, for sure. Our next poem is by Blue Leader One. And this is called Of Ancient Bombs. Maledictum Tartarus, segmentum obscurus, ad finito. I tell you, the path to life is to be found in death, or rather, the death of the fear of shadows. Boom, boom, boom. My heart disintegrates to atoms. My soul is fire, a furious burn. A glow brute into eternity, into distance, into darkness. Wait, a shimmer? I come. In an electro glide along the blue highway. End poem.
Great read, Faizy. You did particularly well with the Latin pronunciation, but wonderful read all the way through. I like the sound words of boom, boom, boom. My heart disintegrates to atoms. My soul is fire, a furious burn. Powerful imagery and metaphors. Just really an amazing rite on the spirit's connection to the whole of eternity. I like the philosophical nature of this. and how it speaks on, you know, the seeking throughout life, and that leads to death, and how there's the purpose found in both of them. Besides the stanza I read, I also really like, I globe root into eternity, into distance, into darkness. It's almost at that, and then leading into the part where the light extends, you know, that darkness that comes before the dawn. You know, wonderful write and very well done.
Well, I had no idea what I was saying for the beginning part, so I'm glad it sounded okay. Blue Leader 1 throwing me a curveball, see if I can say that. I felt like I was saying it, but, you know, someone who actually speaks the language may have disagreed.
Maybe, but that's all right. They're not here, so, you know.
I tried. I this really fits with what a lot of people have been saying about death being a path to life, which is, it's really interesting that the quote brought up so much death, because to reiterate, our prompt was, a seed neither fears light nor darkness, but uses both to grow. And that doesn't necessarily speak about death, but there's been a lot of death in our poems. Not saying that that's a bad thing. I think it's been well used in these poems, but it's interesting to me that that's where people went. I also liked the onomatopoeia, the boom, boom, boom. It's just fun to say, boom, boom, boom.
Well, isn't that from another song, too?
Oh, yeah, it is.
Yeah, okay, yeah. See, we're just getting all these reminders about songs tonight.
Right? Could I tell you who sang it or what it is? No, but I get little parts of songs in my head.
I wonder, see, for some reason it sounds like ZZ Top, but I don't know for sure. That's, yeah, not my forte.
I don't know. Boom, boom, boom. I feel like there's, like, electric guitar behind it, so maybe. And then the repetition of into actually works really nicely, into eternity, into distance, into darkness, because it makes me feel like it's, like, layer upon layer. It's like you go into one, and then you have to go into the next one and into the next one. It's like a path. I'm picturing, like, going through these rings. I play too many video games where it's like you go into this and you're in this section, through the portal, into the portal again. I have a very visual thing of it right now in my head, but I don't know how to explain it, especially because in an electro glide along the blue highway, that just really just finishes the mental image for me. Probably not what is intended, but it works well in my mind. All right. Next one is by Bunbury. Let me post that for you to read.
All right. Let me get back to where I need to be. Are you still on, Faisy?
Oh, yeah, I was just muted.
Oh, okay. Okay. Sorry about that. I don't know why. For some reason, I just had this moment of panic that you had dropped. Not that it mattered too much, but, you know.
It just went too quiet because I muted. You had no background noise.
Yep, that's what it was, the no background noise. There you go. Well, this is Waste of a Poem, or Waste a Poem, by Bunbury. I feel no end, I feel no air, all I see is a mist of anxious rodents swept off their soil. My love boils and overflows, it doesn't know where to go. I have no punctuations to shape me into something masterful. I feel like a sickly fool full of feelings, fighting for fair stars above, unsure if all celestial similes would ever like me as much as they like my sorrows. I feel every second dropping from my fingertips like dollops of bitter sweat beating to a wreath of my dermal dust as my body slowly divorces my ambitions. I hear a song that says, do not be afraid, but I am not frightened of the dark. It is too much light that blinds me. I do not want darkness either. Why is there no somewhere in between? There is no one to make promises to my face. The mirror is as ignorant as the lack of chirping in my gardens and the shedding leaves of my posy. There is no spring. It's either winter or monsoon of my tears, and then comes the sun like a vulture, fasting on the last drop of water. My eyes could shower on the flower of my heart that cannot bloom. There's always more rodents than soil, or more seeds than land. I am so incomplete. I cannot even finish a sentence I start. Yet I have so much to convey. How do I go back to write where it all began? I have smoked past the butt end of hellfire, and now my fingers feel the burn. Is it my destiny to perish in bits, not lifeless, but full of it? End poem.
This is a really, truly great poem. There's so much in here that I loved. The line that stuck out to me the most was, I have no punctuation to shape me into something masterful. It's like you have this kind of stream of consciousness that's going on all the time in your mind, and you kind of spin out of control, and you need to have some boundaries. You know, there have to be periods and commas and quotation marks and all of those things in a symbolic sense to maybe focus your thoughts, to tell you to breathe, to pause between actions, to feel like there's structure to your life. Having no punctuation to shape me is just a really interesting concept. Like, I feel like that in itself could be a prompt that so much could come from. Love that line. And then it has alliteration, of course. Fool, full of feelings, fighting, just fair flights. Another part I really loved was beating to a wreath of my dermal dust. Dermal dust. That's a really cool way of talking about, like, the stuff on your skin. And then body slowly divorces my ambition to separate your body and your mind. And sometimes, you know, as you get older, your body doesn't quite keep up with the things that your mind thought you were going to be able to do. So the body slowly divorcing the ambition is just an incredible way of talking about that. Love that. And then a lot like in Dan's poem, the dark isn't what's scary, it's too much light that is. The other part I thought was really clever was the shedding leaves of my poesy. So poesy written as in like poetry, but poesy spelt a different way would be a flower. So the leaves of my poesy could be the leaf of the flower that falls off and it's slowly dying. But often when you lose a leaf of a flower, it's like, he loves me, he loves me not, he loves me. And then the a leaf of poetry would, like, there's could be a page, it could be a little chapbook. So there are ways that it can work in both directions. Shedding the leaves of the poesy makes me think like you're ripping out the pages and throwing them out because it's just like it's not working. You're doubting yourself. this has so many layers and just really intelligent choices that I'm blown away. Like, I want to read it over and over again. And apparently I have, because it won a previous contest. It got bronze in another Part Sinner, Part Saint contest, which Babbler ran, coping. So, well done, Bunbury, because it's still relevant in this contest, and I am still impressed as I reread it.
Absolutely. Yeah, this is a very impressive write. As you said, it's intelligent, it's layered, the imagery and metaphors are powerful. I like how it seems to speak on bipolar depression and wanting to find that balance in between, wanting to find that place where you feel like you belong, like that you're not too much in the dark or too much in the light. The imagery and metaphors are beautiful and brilliant. And I really like those lines. I hear a song that says, "Do not be afraid, but I am not frightened of the dark. It is too much light that blinds me. I do not want darkness either." I also really like the visceralness of, "There's always more rodents than soil or more seeds than land. I'm so incomplete, I can't even finish a sentence I start, yet I have so much to convey." I'm feeling like, you know, that you have all these thoughts to share and having trouble sharing them, of the idea of the rodents running around in your mind, digging up all that soil, and too much to hold in, but not able to get it all out the way that you want to. So, amazing right, and very well done.
Well said, Pam. Probably it did have some bipolar inspiration, because I think that was part of what Babbler's contest was about. She's been very open about the fact that she is bipolar herself, and she had a contest that was referring to her struggles with mental health. So I imagine that that did come to play in this, and it works on many levels. So, great observation. There we go. Stephen T. Wellman wrote this next poem, and this is called Fruition. Life shatters you. It breaks you. Never adaptive nor accommodating. It is supposed to. We are cleverly creative, cryptic seeds, demolishing, destroying, surrounding a cumbersome clay container, gracefully growing in light until we reach final fruition and bloom on a dark moon. End poem.
Great read, Favy. I tell you, Stephen always has such impressive poetry. This is an amazing brevity, strong imagery and metaphors. I like the on a dark moon, a whole Pink Floyd Dark Side of the Moon vibe going on there. And I like how this poem speaks on growth experienced from the pain in life. And it's beautiful all the way through. But I do really like the alliteration that he's fitted into with, "We are cleverly creative, cryptic seeds, demolishing, destroying." Wonderful lines and very well done.
I agree about the alliteration. I agree that Stephen is always amazing. He's consistently a great poet. Love when I see that he's in one of my contests, which thankfully he often is, because just always a great read. I like how he talks about how life is never adaptive because what that does is force us to be adaptive. I love the alliteration of cleverly creative, cryptic seeds. Especially cryptic seeds is just a great little line. For those of you who are just listening and not reading with your eyes, all the lines are very short. It's the most is four words, and with that one of the words is R. So most of the time it's three words or two words, and I think that really makes it make you consider each word. Actually, some of them are just one word, such as demolishing, destroying. I feel like that really just gets you to think about those words, to emphasize them, because those are such strong verbs to consider. And then the clay container kind of has a historicalness to it, because in the Old Testament of the Bible, there's a place where human bodies are considered the clay containers that hold the candle of the soul. And in ancient Mesopotamia, I think it's the Epic of Gilgamesh, they describe the creation of people as molding them out of clay, and those containers of clay held the sparks that became people. I'm sure that there are other cultures as well. Ancient Greeks had a lot of clay pots. I feel like someone as clever as Stephen was using the knowledge of a clay container to not just be talking about the clay container holding the plant. The clay container is definitely a contributor to the metaphors here. The way that it talks about how the plant just keeps growing and growing. So are we. We change as we go through things. The clay container is described as cumbersome can be true as well. Our bodies can be very awkward during like puberty, can be not always ideal even in our prime, and then tend to deteriorate as we get older. So clay containers can be pretty cumbersome to grow in. That's true. Very well done, Stephen. Our next poem is by Jamie Gibson. And would you please read that for me, Pam?
Absolutely. Progress by Jamie Gibson. I still have the hairspray she got me. It sits there with the brush she bought with it on my bedside table. I haven't brushed my hair in weeks. Can barely get out of bed. People tell me to get well soon. It's all nothing but static in my ears. But I tried to play the piano last night. Playing it went better than I thought it would, honestly. It made me feel something, at least. Every sour note made me cringe. Harmonic chords felt like soaring. At least it was something. I'm in a limbo state. And the only thing worse than being in a limbo state is realizing you're in one. Positivity hurts my eyes, but the nihilism I carry is hurting my back. Something needs to change. Something always needs to change. So I used the hairspray. I brushed my hair. She's gone, and I miss her like the stars. Miss the day, but I'm not gone. And I'm not recoiling from those dark thoughts or letting the light blind me. Not anymore. I am growing. I am living. And I am being. She would be so proud. End poem.
Wow. This is incredible storytelling. Jamie, I'm really sorry if you did lose your mother. Which it sounds like in this poem. this captures that grief really well. Babbler and I have actually talked about it before on the show, and I have a few other friends with some mental health issues who we've kind of just swapped stories about it, where hair is something that falls away, and I don't mean literally falls off, although sometimes mine does, when you're not well mentally or physically. But when you're really depressed, the idea of having to take care of yourself just stops being a priority. If you can just barely get yourself out of bed, then you don't fight with your hair. You're usually a little bit late, and you don't really care what you look like. And eventually it gets worse and worse, and it becomes harder to brush because you haven't brushed it in so long that it's all knotted and becomes matted, and it just gets worse and worse and worse until you finally get help. The brush sitting there unused it speaks to me on a level of that depression where you just can't bring yourself to do basic self-care. The other thing is, because the brush was provided by the mother, the hairspray was given by the mother, it seems, that means that there was a connection there. So if the grief is about losing a mother, then bringing yourself to use the things that maybe usually you would use together, maybe, depending on the age of this person, the mom used to brush her hair for her, used to help her style it, and now it's like just at a loss of not having that. So that's another possibility in that first section, but I really related to the hair thing. And then the piano, and often people who are creative can get a block if they are not well. Sometimes it's the opposite. Sometimes, I'm actually much better at writing poetry when I'm sad than if I'm happy. But for some art, especially if it's something that you did when you were in a good place mentally, something that maybe was shared with the mother, then it can be a struggle to bring yourself to go to that piano knowing that she's not going to listen to it. That every sour note made me cringe. Harmonic chords felt like soaring. So it's like it's bad and it's good, but it's something. And sometimes that little something, even if it's a bad feeling, can be better than not feeling anything. And I think that's really described very well here. I think part of my favorite part is, positivity hurts my eyes, but the nihilism I carry is hurting my back. Because it's both extremes. When you're in a really bad place, there's this like kind of toxic positivity where everyone wants you to smile and be okay, and it's like sometimes you're just not, and you need to be able to not to be sad and to not feel your absolute best at all times. But everyone, sends you all like the cards and memes and things. It's like, this is so happy, everything's fine, you're a hero, which sometimes you're not. So not saying that you're not, Jamie. I just remember feeling that way when I was really, really sick and people kind of over-positive vibed me a little bit. It's just like, it's too much. I can't handle it because it doesn't feel real. And then the nihilism, the more negative side of things, is also like a weight. I like hurting my back because it is like a weight on your shoulders to feel like nothing is going to be going right. It is that weight. So I think that Jamie captured both sides of this, the different types of feelings that you have in these situations. But eventually, the hairspray gets used, the brush gets used, and there's still the pain. There's always going to be the pain. But recognizing that there has to be a balance there, not recoiling from those dark thoughts, so actually letting yourself grieve and not letting the light blind me, not thinking like everything is awesome, perfect things, because you have to recognize that it's not. If you go straight into thinking everything is perfect, it's not going to really feel genuine. So you got to ease your way into that. I thought this was a beautiful poem that really captures the kind of nitty-gritty of grief in a way that felt really realistic.
Oh, absolutely. I like what you had to say about toxic positivity, and that is so true, because especially times like this, and if this is based on untrue events, you know, which I'm thinking it is, I want to say I'm truly sorry for Jamie's loss. And yeah, it's a powerful, emotive, and heartfelt write on grief after a loved one is gone, and the slow process, because it can be a slow and agonizing process to get back to life. You know, as you find yourself in dealing with that depression, dealing with that despair, and dealing with the pressure of people who want you to hurry up and, you know, get well soon to the person you were, get back to, you know, and you can't right away because you're too busy grieving this huge loss, and you're surrounded by reminders like the in her case, the hairspray and the brush. While there are things that she needs, you know, for herself, there are also these painful reminders of the loss. And I too really liked the part about positivity hurts my eyes, but the nihilism I carry is hurting my back. So the idea of nihilism being, you know, living in the moment, you know, that there is no consequences, no future. You know, you don't, there's not that idea of, you know, the idea of a reward or like a heaven hell. There is simply what there is in the moment. And when you're dealing with depression, when you're dealing with sadness, you really just want to fade away, you know, to not have to think about the future. And you realize that that begins to carry its own burdens. And I really love those end lines. I am growing, I am living, and I am being. She would be so proud. And you know what? I have to agree with that. You know, I definitely think whoever this poem is about, if she knows that Jamie is growing and living her life again, it really wouldn't, it means so much. Beautiful write and very well done.
Okay. I feel like I need to emotionally recover from that one, and it's just, I don't know, that tells me it was a really great poem. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Our next poem is by Jenny the Deep, and it's called Grow Fearlessly and Strong Like a Tree. On the outside, looking in, things are not what they seem. Like people, no tree is the same. Branches, like people, grow in different directions. Like tree roots, however, remember where you were planted. Embrace your tree self. Grow strong. Live fearlessly. End poem.
I like this. It's a great brevity. A lot of depth for only 42 words. I think we should have t-shirts that say, embrace your tree self. Grow strong. Live fearlessly. That would be an awesome T-shirt. But it's really difficult to separate any one part because one part of this poem leads so nicely into the other. But I do particularly like the line that says, branches like people grow in different directions, even when we have similar experiences. You know, I mean, even siblings growing up in the same family, which have very similar experiences, can grow in different directions. You know, so wonderful brevity and very well done.
I agree. You know, it has some pretty strong statements for something that's so brief. I like the combination of branches that let you go in different directions, so you're not stuck in exactly the path that you were put on, but you still want to remember where you're planted and have those roots, so you can, you know, gain something from your experiences and from where you come from who you come from, while still having some leeway of which direction you're going to go, so you can have both. Roots and freedom. It's a good combination. I think trees are a really great metaphor for that. Oops. Sorry, I put the same poem twice. There you go. So our next poem is by Asama Chiba. Is it your turn to read?
That is a good question.
Yeah, if I commented last, that means you commented first, which means I read it. Okay.
Okay. All right, then. All right, so this is Roots by Asama Chiba, and it goes like this. Days alternate between hope and despair. We don't know our strength until we know our helplessness. Dreams like seeds in their ripeness and fullness scattered by the wind into uncharted places vanishing in the mist. Until another day when they return with the tides, gather into a cloud to fall down in rain and turn the fields green again. Every fruit gains comeliness from the light of the sun, growing strong stems from this fertile soil and its powerful roots. End poem.
I think this is a really great kind of back and forth between the two worlds, and I think that fits really perfectly with the prompt, that recognition that hope and despair are both going to be there. And it's sometimes not predictable which one, but you're going to have both at one point or another. And it will be that contrast that lets you see your strength and appreciate the good times. I dreamed like seeds in their ripeness and fullness scattered by the wind. So you put your dreams out there. You know, it's not just necessarily going to be random happenstance that some things work out and others don't. You know, you put your seeds of ideas, your things that you want, the things that you're working towards out into the land. They're scattered in the wind. So you might control where you throw it, but the wind is kind of like the world, that randomness that you can't control the circumstances into which you are in. And some of those dreams disappear. They're vanished in the mist. Doesn't work out. But other ones land in a really good spot, and things come through. The tides gather into a cloud to fall down in rain and turn the fields green again. Again, I'm totally projecting myself into this because the rain this week has been so amazing. Like, very rare do people love rain. I tend to like it in general, but with the way the fires have been here, well, the rain is something that everyone's grateful for. And so the idea of, like, rain turning the field green again, where sometimes people think of rain as, like, oh, the gray clouds, everything's sad. But this prompt has us thinking about how a plant needs both the dark and the light. Well, a plant needs those cloudy days because it needs the water to survive. And maybe that means that the people need to have their dark days to be motivated to do other things again. So this really works nicely with the fruit and the seeds and the soil and recognizing your roots and the back and forth. It fits the prompt just perfectly, even though it's a pre-write. And looking at it, it has won so many things. Gold, silver, no, like 3 silvers, a bronze, I think 5 honorable mentions, like tons of things this poem has won. So congratulations to Osama.
Absolutely, yeah. Osama is a very talented poetess, and this has such beautiful imagery and metaphors. I really like how it speaks on the creation of dreams made stronger by hardy roots. And as you were saying, the importance of both sunlight and rain to the growth of a plant, which works so well as a metaphor for the idea that it is both the darkness and the light in our lives that create that growth that we need. So wonderful, right, and very well done.
Well said, Pam. Our next poem is by Ben Hart, and this is called "Aren't You Cold, Kid?" Hey, Papa, if you don't mind, I'd like you to talk to me, to want to know what kind of man I am, and to tell me sometimes what kind of man I need to be, because I didn't understand it then. Why I exhaust you so, though most of me you do not know. Tell me, Papa, why am I weeping? Why your son has all your weaknesses, but none of the strength you tried to sow ever took hold? And in 8 years, all I've done is grow. Through stone and all my tears have turned to snow, and snowmen die alone in a pool of their blood, but I suppose they're spared the rot. And, Dad, I don't know where to go anymore. I just want to go home. I just want time to slow. And for me to get to show you what I tried telling you then, that I made for us a home, the kindest one we ever knew to spend eternity in. Hey, Papa, I've been in love, you know, with so many friends. I wish you'd tell me that it ends. I wish you could show me the steps, the way back to happiness I know we had, because I am lost in places outside this life that I wasn't meant to find. If you must, hand me the knife, and I'll cut out my mind. Would it mean you wouldn't run from me? Please, Heavenly Father, let me love my earthly father, and please let us love to the point we make the time. I know you love them more, and that's okay. They needed it. But I've been finding my own freedom. And now, that I've hit another wall, Dad, I could use a hand. I need you to be there, to see the man you could have made me, the man you could have helped set free. And don't worry, Pa. Some of it's just poetry. Some of it had me weeping. I loved the man who kept me safe when I went to sleep. Now I need a man to show me the way to my dreams and everything along the way I should find worthy. T. teach me how to fight for it. Even if you have to try 1,000 times, even if you're making it all up, just be there. When the rhymes stop and I feel like dying. End poem.
Great read, Daisy. And what an absolutely amazing write by Ben. This really tugs at the heartstrings. You know, oftentimes, you know, it can be difficult to find connection with a parent, and you want that connection, especially, you know, between a father and a son, and you're appreciative of the things that they have done for you and the things they have taught you. But especially as you become your own person, there's this sense that they don't necessarily understand who you are. And while they might love you, which is a wonderful thing, sometimes it doesn't feel like enough if you don't feel like love and accepted for who you are. I like how this speaks on seeking guidance, understanding, and connection, especially in times of despair. I really like, Dad, I could use a hand. I need you to be there to see the man you could have made of me, the man you could have helped set free. And don't worry, Pa, some of it's just poetry. Some of it had me weeping. You know, sometimes poetry says not much at all, and sometimes, most of the time, I think it always opens up a part of ourselves. So amazing write and very well done.
I like that it was addressed to the dad, that it has that kind of letter feeling where it's conversational. It's not in the third person. It is dealing directly with the feelings towards the dad, and the images of like the snowman dying and a pool of their blood as they become the pool, but they're at least they don't rot. Ben has this way of like making things heart-wrenching and then also making them like you kind of gotta smile. Like it's like a little bit of dark humor in there, just to lighten things up every once in a while. Where is it now? When it talks about, I know you love them more than me, I kind of had the impression that maybe the dad had a second family, like maybe after a divorce or something, went on and had new kids, and that he paid more attention to them than say Ben or the first generation kind of thing, that would be really hard to feel like you were replaced and had someone who had more focus. But even if it wasn't a second family, it could just be, you know, siblings who maybe the dad related to more. It's just really hard having that feeling like you weren't who they wanted you to be. Like, it was one part where it said, like, why did I exhaust you so? And it's sort of like that it seemed like the dad was frustrated, was not on board with whatever he was like. I also liked the part where some of it's just poetry and some of it had me weeping, because sometimes in our poetry we can embellish a little bit. I normally keep my poetry fairly private. I say as I, you know, spill my guts on this show and on the website, but like from the people who are actually in my life, I generally keep it separate. Although somehow my brother stumbled across my book, and that got to my parents. So they did read it, and they were kind of horrified because I'm fairly dark in my poems, and I was like, it's just poetry, but it had truth in it. So some of it's just poetry, and some of it had me weeping. Maybe not all of it was as intense as it may come off to a parent who's reading it and going, oh. But I like that he acknowledges, like, some of it had me weeping. Sometimes it really was those big feelings. And it's just such a vulnerable piece, admitting that that he still needs his dad. And you're never so old that you don't need approval and support. And as much as we can say that we don't, I think it's a natural human feeling to want that, at least to some degree, to feel like you have that support. And then in the middle, when he's talking to God, it kind of made me wonder at first if it had always been God he was talking to. When it went to, like, Holy Father, I was like, oh, maybe the Papa was God. But no, it's, at least I don't think so. I think it's just that other connection of, like, the spiritual father figure as well. I'm rambling, but I found this to be powerful, as I expect from Ben, because he tends to give us the big feelings with his poems. You got me again, Ben. All right. Our next one is by A. Shakanovsky. And I'm sure that I say that name wrong, so I apologize. And Pam, I believe it's your turn to read.
It is. And oh my goodness, Faizy, what would we do if a third person joined us? We'd be all kinds of confused trying to keep track.
I have to write it down. If there's more than two people, I have to write it down.
Yeah, exactly. Me too. All right. Well, this is Spring Flowers by A. Shignovsky. Small the wisps of wind that rip the seedlings from the mother. Born aloft upon the breeze, they scatter from each other, each one seeking fertile soil for its regeneration, lying on the ground asleep, awaiting germination, hibernating through the fall and icy winter weather, stirring from their sleep in spring, they sprout among the heather, nurtured by the sun and nourished by the abundant showers, they become the latest generation of spring flowers. And poem.
Thank you for reading. That was nice. This has, like, a gentleness to it that I feel like is softer than what A. Shakanovsky usually gives us. I like his usual, and I like this, but it's just, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, but this doesn't feel like his usual vibe. I felt so peaceful listening to this. The breeze that scatters them. I guess the first line, rip the seedlings from the mother, has a little bit of a abruptness to it. But then they're put down, and they have their nice sleep, and they sprout. It has some really pleasant word choices, and just creates a beautiful nature image. This is very sweet brevity.
Absolutely, yeah. This does have a gentleness to it, And while rip the seedlings from the mother can be definitely kind of a more harsher image, the fact that he begins it with small the wisps of wind. Like you think of wisps of wind as something gentle. It's been fascinating to see the different responses throughout this contest to this one prompt. And I like how Aishavnatsky takes it on a more literal level, like writing literally about the flowers. But also, I think that it can be taken metaphorically in the idea of eventually, you know, our children or perhaps people who are like children to us, you know, remove themselves from us, distance themselves from us so that they can grow and become the next generation. This had wonderful rhyme and flow and was beautifully written all the way through.
And wisps of wind sounds so lovely.
It does. Absolutely.
This next poem is called Painting the Roses Red by Selena Darush. Such a pretty garden bed I've made on which to lay my head, blessed by roses white and red. When all were planted white, a thread of worry unravels, dread. A bed of roses thorns did shred, flesh from bone, and painted perfect petals garnet instead. End poem.
Great read there, Faisy. And this is a new name to me, Kalina Darak. I look forward to reading more of them. And I hope they're inspired to write for more of our contests. I like the rhyme in this. I like how she went with the whole Alice in Wonderland theme of the Queen of Hearts, you know, wanting her roses painted red. And to me, it really speaks on the whole idea of flaws exposed, when trying to cover up the thorns. When we try to cover up the thorns, it seems as if even more problems become revealed. So wonderful, right, and very well done.
I really like what you said there about trying to cover up thorns and end up making things worse. That's awesome. This had a really like fun kind of darkness to it, where a bed of roses thorns did shed, flesh from bone and painted, like the shredding the flesh from bone could be such a dark, gross thing, but something about like the rhythm of this and the rhymes and the questions made it playful for me. And I think that's fitting because the Alice in Wonderland references, you know, Alice in Wonderland actually has a lot of dark themes, but it also has that kind of whimsicalness to it. And I feel that in this poem. So she used the plant metaphors and as the prompt does, and she had both the light and the dark. I thought she had a really good balance of that. Very well done. I would definitely like to read more from her as well. Okay. We have 5 minutes left. Let me look how long yours is, Pam. I don't know if we have time. Yeah. I think we can, because if it cuts off, we have a minute to comment afterwards. Okay, so Pam wrote to my next contest, which is, I've extended it now. It is a word prompt contest, and this will be a preview because Pam had to use the word or the inspiration of the definition of the word. And I'm going to let you speak for yourself, Pam. Here we go.
All right. Well, I wrote to to the word Lakeyism, and people can check out the meaning themselves. And this is the grand purpose on the edge. I have a mind obsessed with tragedies, the what-ifs of life, the long falls, the engulfing flames, choking on smoke, choking on water. When I was 16, my father took me to see the Grand Canyon, and always obedient to the rules, I stood back to admire the majestic view. I think of risk takers, near misses, the dance with death, survival, the life that flashes before your eyes. Oh, to be that person that leans too far over the edge, who French kisses danger like a dormant lover that needs to be awakened. Should I have become that person, walked on the blade of the double-edged sword, grown a garden of lessons learned in a soil of blood and bruises, to be one of those individuals who finds a grand purpose in the peril of life. But what of those who don't survive, or worse yet, survive with broken bodies and broken minds, never quite remembering who they were or who they could have been? Sometimes I can still see the flames and hear the entitlement of gravity pulling me down to reveal the transformation in the tragedy. But to be honest, I prefer growing in ways that don't involve burnt flesh and broken bones. Yet still, my psyche can't let go of the potential wisdom found within the fall. End poem.
Ooh, I really enjoyed this. First of all, I love the entitlement of gravity. You can still see the flames and hear the entitlement of gravity. Love that. That's amazing. The potential wisdom found within the fall is also fantastic. I like that you use the Grand Canyon as an introduction, because I think that's one of those really good places to describe the call of the void, where there is that kind of like, do you just want to go over the edge? Because it's this curiosity kind of thing where you're pulled to it. I think that's a really good example of where you would have those feelings. And there is that longing to be the adventurer, but also being smart enough to know that a lot of those people do die or get seriously hurt. And there's an excitement to it, but there's also ways to learn without the danger. I think you captured that really well. But I can't get over the entitlement of gravity. I love that line
Thank you so much. Thank you. Yeah, well, I thought about this. When I saw this word, I thought about the fact that I'd seen a newspaper, an online news report about recently this teenager fell off the ledge at the Grand Canyon and survived. Now, what kind of condition he is in, I'm not sure. And how far the fall, I'm not sure. But it made me think that because, you know, I actually did go to the Grand Canyon when I was 16. So, you know, I thought, you know, those two thoughts plus this word really just work really well together. So thank you for the inspiration.
Oh, thanks for writing to it. We are unfortunately out of time. So that was our show for tonight. I am away next week, so there will not be a Part Center, Part Saint next week. But I'll be back the week after that. And we will be doing the contest with the word that Pam just did. So check out my contest, because I am extending it. Since I'm going to be away, you'll have extra time to write to that contest. Thank you so much for joining me, Pam.